It's now to the plight of some people who may well have fallen into an out-of-sight, out-of-mind black hole in this all-consuming pandemic. I'm going to read now from a quite powerful editorial in a recent issue of The Economist. Over 250,000 mariners are stranded at sea, even though they are at least a month past the end of contracts that typically last 3 to 9 months. Each day that total rises, and an essential job starts to look more like indentured labour. Well, last week the UK government hosted a virtual summit of 14 countries to try to sort this problem amidst an increase in the latest estimates to 300,000 stranded mariners. Incredible. I'm delighted to welcome from the UK Guy Platten, who's General Secretary of the International Chamber of Shipping, the Global Trade Association representing ship owners and operators, and Helen Joyce, an Executive Editor at The Economist's Events section, who's been trying hard to elevate this story. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get into how this has come about, Guy Platten, you've worked in shipping for a long time in various capacities and you've had plenty of time at sea yourself. Could you give us a sense, please, of what it must be like for some of those seafarers? Some have been on board for 10 months or more.
Well, if you think you're away from your family, you're away from your loved ones, we know that seafarers have missed their own weddings. We know they've missed the births of their children. And we know they've missed probably the funerals and the deaths of close relatives. And when you're away from home thousands of miles, it just exacerbates the problems. I can remember when I was at sea and I was once told that my relief wasn't able to join the following day and it would be another month. I can remember the feelings of depression that washed over me as all sorts of plans that I'd had and made were put in the bin. So, I mean, I really empathise with the seafarers. And I think the biggest thing is they just don't know when they're going to get off. If you're given a date, you can work to it, but it's like a never-ending sort of crisis, really, for them.
So this is the essence of uncertainty. You know, we're all talking about ambiguity and uncertainty, but this is the essence of it, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's that which is taking a mental and physical toll. And actually, you can't keep working people relentlessly. Seafarers generally work 7 days a week. And once you've got over a year, you know, you haven't had that break that we all need in order to be fresh and ready. And of course, there then becomes safety implications and all sorts of other things. So there's a real crisis now brewing. And I think the world needs to take a bit more notice. We really welcomed the summit hosted by the UK last week. It was sad that Australia wasn't able to be there at that summit. But we need them to be designated as key workers. We need commercial flights to be resumed for seafarers. And we need administrative and bureaucratic procedures like visas and others to be waived, because seafarers are essential workers, just like the frontline health workers which we're all quite rightly lauding.
Yeah, now I'm going to come back to that in a moment. Just a little bit more detail, because I think most of us are landlubbers, and this is really quite an amazing story that's been bubbling away there quietly. Can seafarers usually go ashore in that time away? I mean, already 3 to 9 months sounds like an incredibly long shift. And of course, they are mostly men from poorer countries, aren't they?
Yeah, you make an important point. Yes, shore leave is really important. So a walk ashore just to go to the shops, to get some normality is really important. There's also a lot of ports around the world which crew go to and gravitate to, and they can phone home and just enjoy some leisure time away from their ship. And that was denied as well. So it's a combination of all these things which make this a desperate situation. And it's really good that you're doing this now, because it just raises the issue up in the consciousness of the public.
And Helen Joyce, you don't think enough effort has been made, given that these cargo ships are high-pressure, high-risk places. So it's a sort of recipe for accidents, let alone the sheer... Well, I mean, it just sounds quite unacceptable.
It is unacceptable. And I mean, unlike Guy, I know nothing about the industry. I literally was at one of our conferences and someone from the industry mentioned at the time 150,000 people were trapped on board, just the international cargo ships. There are more to do with cruise ships and the ones that do inland shipping. And I just thought, 150,000 people, how have I never heard about this story? Absolutely extraordinary. These people are the absolute linchpin of the global trading system. And so that's why I got interested. And the more I found out about it, the more genuinely outraged I was. And I've no skin in this game, but to think that all of us are getting everything that we need, or the food we get in our shops, the fuel that we burn, everything is coming because of the work of these people who are being treated as just expendable, because they can be.
Has anybody, is anybody in their corner arguing for them, really? Have they been?
Oh, yes. No, loads of people are arguing for them, of course, absolutely. The industry bodies, the IMO, which is the UN body. The trouble is that it's governments who need to act. And governments are all able to say it's somebody else's problem, because it's a very international industry.
Go on.
And if I can maybe add to that as well, it's what it is a disconnect. So actually the transport authorities in all the countries, including Australia, recognise seafarers and recognise that vital role. But of course, during this crisis, it's been public health and other issues which have taken front line. And seafarers have been the sort of the collateral damage to this. So the only way this is going to happen is cross-government to work together. So you look in the case of Australia, and I would, you know, shout out for Queensland, which is allowing some crew changes to take place under specific circumstances and various protocols in place. But other states aren't, because the public health are making decisions and they're not considering this bigger picture.
We had such a traumatic time with cruise ships early on, for instance, in the state of New South Wales, where, you know, there were people allowed off and it caused really mayhem in terms of, we wouldn't have the issues that we've got in Australia.
But remember that these guys are not, they're not on cruise ships.
Yeah.
These people are some of the world's safest people. They are, if you're talking about socially isolated, my goodness, they're socially isolated. It's literally
absolutely
because they're out of sight, out of mind. You know, lorry drivers were immediately designated key workers and allowed to cross borders with their lorries because they have to. These men are just being worked because they can be. They can stay on the ship while their things get off. It's absolute cruelty. It really is. I got more and more outraged about it the more I found out about it. And you mentioned the safety issue too. You know, these people, maybe 20 people on a large ship that has heavy machinery, it's manoeuvring in ports, you know, a small slip can mean, you know, an oil spill or a crash that costs, you know, tens of millions of pounds. Insurers should be in on this. Insurers are getting very worried, by the way. It's just an environmental disaster waiting to happen, as well as the personal cost to these men.
So, Guy, what has the industry done to try to resolve this?
So we've been working, we develop as an industry a set of protocols which basically look after the safety of the seafarer from leaving home to joining ship and back again, making sure they're safe from COVID and also keeping communities safe from COVID with testing, isolation, all sorts of things. So we've got those protocols we've developed. We've worked with the IMO, who've then issued them out to all member states.
That's the United Nations.
It's international. Yeah, that's exactly. They're sort of our global regulator, if you like. And they've issued them out to all the different governments saying, please, please follow these protocols, adopt these protocols and allow crew changes to take place. We've been lobbying very hard. The UK summit last week was a major step forward as well. And we are starting to get much more media attention like yourselves. So, you know, once the public realise actually what a vital, vital service seafarers do. And the thing is, this is not hard to solve. It just needs goodwill and cooperation to make it happen. We do not want to put infected seafarers on the ships. And likewise, we don't want to take ill people and try and transmit them into the community. Trust the industry to do our bit. We'll work with governments to make this happen. And it's not even a question of money. It's a question of political will.
What do you mean by that? Because I presume it means that if you do land the seafarers, they've got to be then... How do you fly them to their homes? Because that would be an important symbol, would it not, for the local populations?
Absolutely, but the ship owners will cover that cost. So we're not looking for government money for this. So ship owners will cover the cost of crew changes. So it's not about that. And some of the extraordinary lengths ship owners have gone to. So I'll give you just a little example. They couldn't do a crew change off the coast of Africa. So the ship owner, at his cost, sailed the ship firstly to Gibraltar to try and do a crew change, and then to the UK, which does allow crew changes. So, you know, ship owners will do whatever they can to do, but if governments were able to work with us, we could help solve this problem. And it's, you know, every day that passes, more and more seafarers are trapped in these conditions, and at some point something's going
to
break.
And I think, Helen, you think it is up to governments, not the industry.
Oh, the industry is really doing what it can. I was extremely impressed in my reporting by, you know, this protocol, which is very detailed and worked out, and the whole industry is behind it. And as Guy said, the ship owners who are spending significant amounts of money to change crew whenever they can. But, you know, 50,000 people are meant to change crew every week. So you have to keep running to stay still. The problem is just that governments have it down the bottom of their list of priorities because they can. Because they can just keep going, they keep getting the things they need to. And at some point you have to say, you know, what's the point in in, you know, praising your healthcare workers. In, I don't know what you do in Australia, but in the UK, there's like a weekly clap for the NHS.
Yes.
And it's like, that's hypocrisy if you've got people who are basically indentured labour.
Because you think these people have to be considered equivalent, that they're essential
workers. They are equivalent. They are equivalent. I mean, the phrase the industry uses is 90% of everything. But, you know, they are responsible for 90% of everything that you buy. You know, you're relying on them. If they stopped 2 days later, the world would collapse.
When the 14 government representatives who attended last week's summit, Guy, must have read The Economist that has been arguing for this, because, you know, some of the recommendations from The Economist's work on this, which has to be praised. So also the Financial Times has been working on this. What was the key thing that you think might have emerged from the summit that, say, Australians could take note of, given that we weren't there, as you say, a whole lot of other countries, but we weren't there?
I should I didn't really recommend anything. I just said, you know, do what the industry is telling you to do. It's a very good protocol.
Okay, righto.
So we work with the UK government as well, and we helped come up with the pledges that we wanted as an industry, which we got actually 13 signed up to on the day, which is classify them as key workers, as some do, is remove the bureaucratic restrictions regarding visas and immigration things, because seafarers carry a huge range of documentation anyway to join ships. To encourage commercial flights to be restarted. And they're quite three simple asks, really. And if governments can sign up to that and to use the protocols which we have developed, you know, they run to 68 pages, so it's a lot of thought and attention's gone into them. Let's get the seafarers moving again. And it was great that 13 countries, including Indonesia, including Philippines,
Denmark, UK, Germany, Denmark, Greece, France, Netherlands, Norway, Philippines, Saudi Arabia, Singapore, UAE, UK and US.
Yes. Yeah, that's it. And, you know, we want more, but love Australia to sign up to that as well. And,
okay.
And others, because Australia, a maritime nation, is a, you know, you depend on ships to get your exports out and imports in. So, you know, work with us, sign up to that. And
I kept thinking about
really
people
help.
In coffee shops. You know, there's people queuing in coffee shops and we're reopening barbers. And, you know, you can go to a restaurant and we have these protocols for putting chairs far apart from each other. You know, if you can think about all of those things, then why can you not think about how to get 20 men off a ship safely to an airport, maybe onto a chartered flight, even if commercial flights aren't running? You know, sometimes you'll charter them. And you have to think that it's just because they don't need to. Somebody else could do this. You know, they could change in Singapore instead. And think about the morale of these men. I mean, on top of everything to do with the uncertainty is the thought that everybody's forgotten you and that they don't care.
Very stirring. Thank you very much indeed, Guy Platten and Helen Joyce. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Helen's an executive editor at The Economist. Guy is general secretary of the International Chamber of Shipping. And we did put some of these points to the Australian government. No official response from them on why we did not attend that summit on crew changes. We understand there may have been a problem with short notice. The Deputy Prime Minister, Michael McCormack, is the Minister for Transport and therefore for Shipping. His office told us that in Australia, all workers are essential workers, as declared by the Prime Minister, and that the government has supported the aviation industry to continue key flight services. On visas, to enable sailors to get to those commercial flights that were being described, or simply to take shore leave. Now, that's a Border Force issue, apparently. Border Force did not address our question about any special provisions for crew during the pandemic. The Australian Maritime Safety Authority, AMSA, earlier this month extended seafarer contracts up to 14 months without leave, which it sees as a practical solution. So, look, you can just see how it falls between a range of stools. And one of our texters said they had absolutely no idea of this. No, well, nor did I until about a week and a half ago, and I started seeing the stories and thought we've got to do that story.